First of all, this will be the last Mingle with Tingle for the year, the last time we have the aura of Laura. All this nonsense I do about her name, all this silly stuff about aspidistras, but the fact is that Laura has been an absolutely central part of this little wireless program for on and off for 15 years. And Laura, I wouldn't have it any other way. Welcome back for your last night of the year.
Oh, Philip, that's very nice. It's very nice to be here.
It's like the last night of the proms. I'm getting all emotional.
Look, yes, I can see you with your Union Jack there, Philip.
let's start off with, Angus Taylor, the gift that keeps on giving. Would you explain to this ancient broadcaster why the hell the PM is still backing him?
Look, I think I really think that politicians get into this space where they can't see beyond the point of we just can't concede anything to the other side. And I think this Prime Minister is particularly sort of beholden to the idea. Now, I think within the government there's quite a wide realisation that Angus Taylor is currently in all sorts of trouble. Could get worse, Philip. Could get worse, but
it's getting worse by the minute. For heaven's sake!
But it's just this thing of just hold on to a few more days, and we can get through Parliament, and we won't have conceded anything to Labor on this. But it's just ridiculous. And one, it's ridiculous, and two, it's just sort of depressing because there's a few things going on here, Philip. One of them is that there seems to be a clear case that Angus Taylor has misled the Parliament. There seems to be a clear case that he was, I think as we discussed last week, distributing doctored documents in an effort to be clever in a fairly childish political attack on the City of Sydney Lord Mayor. These are all pretty stupid things for a cabinet minister to be doing. And whatever the genesis of the incident involving the doctored documents, it's this massive distraction to the government. It's gone from being in a position where it was sort of sailing towards the end of the year, not looking too bad, to a point where this sort of thing just distracts the government and distracts everybody else and really reflects badly on the sorts of standards that the Prime Minister insists he's going to have. And when you hear government saying, oh, we're just as bad as the other side, it rather constrains the argument they are usually running the rest of the time, which is we're better than the other side.
In your finely honed essay at the weekend in The Fin, you reminded all of us that Paul Keating stood by Carmen Lawrence at a time when it was probably unwise, but I have to say there was a certain nobility in that.
Well, I think there was. I suspect there was always a story around that, in fact, Paul Keating called Carmen Lawrence in and sort of hoped that she'd sort of say, oh, I should stand aside. Now, his view was that Carmen Lawrence was under a massive political attack from the West Australian Liberals, who called a royal commission into her actions. Now, whatever the merits or lack of merits in what Carmen Lawrence had originally done when she was in Western Australia, and without a doubt there was a political attack there, once again, this was the health minister. The government had a lot of really important health policy issues to consider, and for months Carmen Lawrence stayed in the job and was defended by the Prime Minister when there was important stuff to be done for you and me, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer. But I think I'm still not sure, and I know this is an unpopular opinion in some quarters, I think that was a really irresponsible thing for both of them to have done, not because it was a question of right or not. It's a question of they're supposed to be there for taxpayers working for our benefit. And if this sort of distraction goes on, are you really helping and doing your job?
Okay. I want to ask you about a significant phone call, and I'm not talking about the Donald to Ukraine. Guess which phone call I'm talking about?
I think you're talking about Scott Morrison ringing the New South Wales Police Commissioner.
Gosh, you're good. Oh, prescience.
Ah, yes. Well, look, this is one of those issues where everybody sort of initially went, oh, okay, that sounds reasonable enough. But I think we should set up the scene here, shouldn't we, Philip? This is the beginning of last week. This is when Angus Taylor really starts coming under significant pressure about these doctored documents and who had said what to whom. And it emerged that the New South Wales Police had set up a strike force, which always sounds rather exciting, doesn't it? And this one was called Strike Force Garrod, which I'd encourage listeners to check up their urban dictionaries to find out about Garrods. So suddenly the New South Wales Police were holding a criminal investigation into the actions of Angus Taylor in forwarding, or his office forwarding, these documents to the Daily Telegraph, which had these doctored figures in them. Now, that obviously was pretty exciting. The Prime Minister clearly didn't know about it when it emerged a few minutes before question time in the House of Representatives. Labor had seen the stories or had been tipped off or whatever, asked questions. Scott Morrison was on the back foot, which no Prime Minister ever likes. Sort of bumbled his way through question time and said he'd find out more about it and find out whether this was in fact true or not. So he then goes off and personally rings the New South Wales Police Commissioner, who helpfully tells us the next day that the Prime Minister had called him two or three times on his mobile phone, but he didn't recognise the number, so he hadn't immediately picked it up. Now, I think this tells us a bit about Scott Morrison's state of mind, which was fairly panicky, because I think the sort of feeling in the building at that point of time in Parliament House was, well, this really, despite all the various controversies that have sort of surrounded Angus Taylor through the year, and there've been a few, this was the one where you go, right, this is the point where whatever the story is, this minister should stand aside while these inquiries go on. But instead, Scott Morrison comes back into the chamber and says, oh, look, I've spoken to the police commissioner and he says there's nothing to see here and, you know, Bob's your uncle. So it takes about another 12 or 18 hours for Labor to really start cranking up this issue and say, wait a minute, how is it possibly appropriate for a Prime Minister to personally ring the New South Wales Police Commissioner about a criminal inquiry into one of his colleagues and say, what's the story here? Now, you can argue that there is a reasonable case to ring up and just sort of say, well, you know, is it correct that you are having this inquiry and, you know, what's the story? But, of course, whatever happens from that moment onwards, it's going to have the appearance or the possible appearance of interference in the investigation. And I suppose one example of that would be the police commissioner indicated that the inquiry would probably be conducted and finished by this week, which raises a whole range of questions. Well, that was quite quick, wasn't it? Would be one of them. Another one would be if the police commissioner or the police force releases the findings of its inquiry before Parliament sits or after Parliament sits, is that going to look like it's been influenced by the fact that Prime Minister has contacted the police commissioner? So it just creates all sorts of unnecessary drama and implications and imputations for both the government and for the police force.
Laura, as you know, there were people who claimed to have sat in on the famous Trump call and insisted it was all absolutely fit and proper. I understand the chief law officer was eavesdropping on this phone call.
That's right. The Attorney General, Christian Porter, Nikki Sava revealed this yesterday, and Christian Porter confirmed it in the Parliament today, that that he had actually been sitting in on this phone call and he thought it was all perfectly rigidige and was not worried about it at all. But I think apart from anything else, once again, the fact that he was sitting in on the call shows that there was a real concern within the government about what exactly this investigation might mean for Angus Taylor. And but I think it does really raise this question about what the government sees as the appropriate boundaries are between, you know, police investigations and the government's own work.
The funniest headline I saw in the paper today said this: Hanson loses her credibility. And this, of course, is because of the government's shock in having its union-busting bill defeated.
Yes, this was one of those extraordinary moments that where, you know, things still surprise you in politics, Philip, and certainly surprised the government. The government had been working under the understanding that Pauline Hanson was going to support their union-busting legislation, the wonderfully named Ensuring Integrity Bill, and she had certainly voted, as had her colleague Malcolm Roberts, with the government on a range of amendments through the course of the discussion of the bill in detail in the Senate on Thursday. And then when the final vote came, she voted against the bill. Now, there are all sorts of interesting aspects of this for those who are into the technicalities. One of them was, and clearly One Nation knew this, the vote was 34-34. So it wasn't actually sort of really resolved in a way, because it was a tied vote. Essentially, the status quo of the bill remains, but the government can reintroduce it. And I think the important or interesting part of this, well, there are a few bits of this story which are interesting. One of them is that I think the government walked into it because it had been so flippant about the Westpac revelations, about the fact that it had 23 million breaches of the anti-money laundering legislation. Now, this really just sort of gave an opportunity for Pauline Hanson and One Nation to say, well, look, there's this double standard here between the way big banks are treated and the way unions are treated, which, of course, was also the argument that unions and Labor were running. And this gave Pauline Hanson an opportunity to make a stand on this. She's been feeling pretty sore about the way the coalition treated her in the election. But I think also we're seeing this really interesting contest between two much more politically savvy crossbenchers now, meaning Pauline Hanson and Jackie Lambie, about being the last person to have their vote counted, if you like. The Brian Harradine position, where you always wanted to be the last vote that was uncertain for the government to maximise your bargaining position.
Laura, before I let you toddle off, I'm going to ask you one of those impossible questions. Can you sum up the year, please, in federal politics?
Look, the way I'm thinking about it at the moment, Philip, is that there's been all this excitement and movement and drama and various scandals over the course of 12 months, and we started the year with everybody expecting that Labor was going to win the election, and now everybody says, well, that was a pretty stupid expectation. But if you think about it, the two of the really big issues that are dominating everything we talk about in federal politics, i.e. the economy and climate change, haven't really gone anywhere. The economy started the year looking a bit weak and not really getting anywhere, and with the Reserve Bank saying, oi, you know, you've got to do something more in the budget. We can't keep trying to fix it with interest rates. And it feels like we're still there, only a little bit worse at the end of the year. And climate change too, as a policy issue, has just gone absolutely nowhere. The other big theme of the year, of course, has been China, and that just keeps building and building in the complexity of the story about our relationship with the country and with its political system.
Laura, I've been sitting here just on 30 years. You've been with me half that time. I'll cut a deal with you. I'll come back next year if you will.
That sounds like a great deal, Philip, so I shall look forward to it.
Thank you, Laura. Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent for 7:30.